Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis.
I'm Ron.
I'm Jean Marie.
And I'm Lita. Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're talking about mental health with chronic illness. Our guest once again is Christy Amos. Christy is a compassionate and resilient individual who has dedicated her life to helping others navigate the challenges of living with chronic illnesses. Despite her own battles with multiple chronic conditions, she has become a powerful patient advocate, leveraging her personal experiences to support and empower others. As a freelance author, she shares her expertise and insights on living with chronic conditions, providing education, comfort, and inspiration to those affected. Good morning, Christy. Thank you for joining us once again.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here. And I wanted to say before we start, congratulations on your award.
Oh, yes.
Thank you
very much. The Social Health Award.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Very excited.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep. Hi, Christy. This is Ron again. Hey, can you start us off? Why would someone with a chronic illness also have mental health difficulties?
Well, you guys are counselors, so I'm sure that you probably know the answer to this, but there are a lot of comorbid diagnoses when you have health issues, comorbid meaning multiple health issues at once. So it's not uncommon for somebody who is struggling with mental health to also, well, someone struggling with chronic illness to also have mental health issues, and the relationship between the mind and body is so close, so tight, that you usually have one with the other.
Mm-hmm. Right. I was just reading actually that the climate change and the increased heat that we're all living with also is adding to mental health problems, because the hotter your brain gets, the more difficult it is for you to process things. Mm-hmm. Christy, Christy, when were you first diagnosed with anxiety or depression?
So I was actually diagnosed with anxiety back when I was in high school. I had been living with symptoms pretty much my entire life, but trying to look through my notes to see if. So it was my freshman year of high school that things started to get significantly bad, that my mom took me to the doctor and pretty quickly and easily got a diagnosis of anxiety.
Okay.
Was there a triggering event, or what happened that had your mom take you to the hospital at that time?
Yeah, so actually 9/11 is what kind of kicked it off significantly. We lived in Northern Virginia at the time, and my dad was actually working at the Pentagon when it was hit. My anxiety about that situation, about the safety of family, got pretty intense. I mean, I was a 14-year-old sleeping on the floor of my parents' bedroom. So it was pretty significant anxiety back then.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Yeah. And how did your healthcare team address your anxiety?
Early on, it was just medication management. In the mental health field, there's kind of a discussion between whether it's environmental factors, cognitive aspects, but there's also the side of the hormones or the neurotransmitters that can be off. And so you kind of have to balance those two. But mine was very easily spotted as like a neurotransmitter issue. And so that was the kind of route that we decided to take first.
Okay.
So how did your mental health start to change as you began to develop some more of your chronic health issues. Mm-hmm. How did that affect your mental health?
Yeah. Like I said before, the two are so very interconnected. And I would mm-hmm. say that as my health issues started to develop, the depression aspect of it became more apparent because I was dealing with more issues and not able to do as much as I had wanted to with my life. And so the depression became more significant as things continued, as my health issues declined.
Right.
Okay.
But was there a specific point, or could you pinpoint something that when this happened, things just started to spiral and get worse, or was it just kind of cumulative?
I would say cumulative, but it was also kind of the life circumstances I was in. My background is also in mental health, and so I was working in the community doing crisis work. And being a mental health worker who is also struggling with my own mental health issues, it's a really difficult balance. And it was sure. getting to the point where my job was encroaching on my personal mental health. And so hearing those stories and that triggering information day in and day out, eventually had essentially a mental breakdown, and my depression got significantly worse, and I had to step out of work and do a day program for about a month just to kind of get my own mental health back on track before I could get back into my job.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, we don't spend enough time helping people in my opinion, I think that mental health should be part of the education system, where we're taught coping skills, problems, management skills, how to talk with one another, anger management skills. I think all of those things, if we're taught from an early age, can be extremely advantageous. But because we're not, and mental health is also typically like put on
a taboo.
Yeah, it's taboo. Mm-hmm. It's put to the side. And it's the people who are high functioning and self-aware that are typically getting the mental health care. And the people who are not self-aware and not aware of their problems, who are not, seeking out that care, that, but I think mental health care for so many different career paths, for teachers, for,
I think anybody in a service industry that has yes. to interact with public.
Oh, public, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Apparently, anyone who works on an airplane.
Right.
Anyone who is in the mental health field, and it, like you said, or in anything to do with children can use, the police, emergency services. It's just, it needs to be part of your training for those positions as well, because I don't know how anyone does it.
So can I put my two cents in?
Sure.
because you guys know where I work in my clientele, my mm-hmm. students. Mm-hmm. So when somebody has a, when somebody has a physical disability, it can be seen and visualized. Mm-hmm. So when you see someone that's in a wheelchair or using some adapted device, or if they've got a cane, they have vision issues, et cetera, et cetera. Most people recognize that person has some type of disability or impairment or whatever type of word you're going to use. However, when you see someone, and I'm going to use air quotes, when you see someone walking down the street, again, using air quotes, looking normal, which I absolutely hate that word, mm-hmm. but you don't see any adaptive devices, you don't see anything that is going to jump out at you that they have is some type of impairment. People tend to look at that person as they're okay. Mm-hmm. They have no problems mm-hmm. and you can't see mental health issues.
Right.
And again, if it's taught early mm-hmm. on, you can better understand that this is something that's just as Well, it's needed just as well as somebody that does have a physical disability that you need to be able to interact, you be able to work with folks that are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's not, again, from where I work and the industry I'm in and all that, if you can't see it, it doesn't exist until you know better.
Mm-hmm. Which is, yeah,
it's a bias.
Yeah.
And to your point, no, geez, Marie, I think, sorry, I'm going to say that over, stuttered my words.
Okay.
Jean Marie, to your point that it has been such a taboo subject, and I appreciate that society is moving towards more mental health awareness, but I think that there is still such a long way to go
as
bringing it to the forefront and making it as, I want to say typical, air quotes, as somebody with a physical disability or diabetes or, you know, something that's socially, again, air quotes, socially acceptable.
Right.
But
yeah,
we're just not there.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I will say, like, the getting it into schools and teaching kids from a young age that everyone at some point is going to need help or is going to be at a spot where they could use assistance, and that everyone needs to learn how to work with other people and how to deal with their own emotions and everything. That would just be a really big step forward. And also in integrating mental health into medical care, because the only time we've ever seen that happen was with an organ transplant.
You're right.
Where it's a requirement to get an organ transplant is that you have mental health care, that it's on the checklist. You have to go to a mental health care professional. But it is, no matter what the situation, everyone can use mental health care. But Christy, I'm kind of curious, what is your take on medical gaslighting and how has it affected your mental health?
Yeah, that is for sure a hot topic these days.
Symptoms. Okay, and Ron is asking, what is gaslighting? It's from...
I'm showing my age, sorry.
No, because it's from an old movie, and it's where a man and a woman are married, and the man is searching the attic for jewels, and it turns out, I won't spoil it, but so he goes up there to search for the jewels. And to do so, he turns on the gas lights in the attic, which reduces the gas output on the first floor where the wife is. And so she sees the gas lights dim.
Okay.
And he's like, you're seeing things. There's nothing going on. There's no noises in the attic. The gas lights are fine. It's all in your head. There's nothing going on. But no, she's absolutely right. Her husband's a creep. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, gaslighting
is when you're told. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Christy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That I can work with. Okay. Thank you.
It's when you hear noises in the attic.
So it's when you go to a doctor and you say, well, I have this symptom, this symptom, and this symptom. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, we've done all these tests and you're just anxious. You're just exaggerating. You're looking for
like
attention.
A hypochondriac. Like always complaining about something that they can't find.
But that's the responsibility back on the patient.
Okay.
That says,
right. Okay.
There's something.
Instead of saying, I don't know. As a healthcare provider, I can't identify the source of the problem. But you obviously, you're dealing with something and let me refer you to someone else.
And a lot of it's like, well, you just need to go see a psychiatrist or you need to go see a counselor. Because we can't find anything, so it's got to be in your head. It can't be real because we can't figure out what it is.
But if it is in your head, even if it is in your head, it is real.
I get that. Okay. I've heard of it. It's just
we will put
it's
the
like
movie,
a younger generation term.
Yeah, but it's from an old movie. We will put a link for the movie on our website.
Okay.
It's a classic.
Put a link to the new generation dictionary too.
Oh yeah, Urban Dictionary.
Oh,
don't go to the Urban Dictionary. You type in anything and it's going to come up with something you weren't expecting.
But the gaslighting is basically telling somebody that it's in your head.
Right. You have a rash.
Yeah.
We can't identify the cause, so it must be in your head.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think so. I have had some significant insights to my own health and mental health this past week, and diving more into the psychosomatic or psychogenic symptoms. Mm-hmm. And even with the gaslighting that's so popular, you also have to separate what sort of trauma that the patient has experienced is leading to these physical symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one of those, there's no black and white, and the gray is so significant that you can't really parse out what is causing these symptoms. So while I think mm-hmm. that there is a very significant aspect of gaslighting, you also have to look at the trauma that the patient has experienced and why they may be experiencing the symptoms that they are, which are very real, but are mm-hmm. also trauma-induced.
Okay. Yeah, that's a significant point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Christy, now, how have you and your healthcare team chosen to treat or mitigate your symptoms now?
So it's a combination of a lot of stuff. Medications are probably the most important. When my doctors try and mess with my medications, it really messes with my head. But mm-hmm. like I mentioned a few minutes ago, I'm also in therapy, and I work mm-hmm. with a trauma-informed psychotherapist. She's actually a psychologist. And working through some of that trauma that is contributing to my physical symptoms and my mental health symptoms, and as well as like self-care is important mm-hmm. as well.
Well, I think Jean was going to ask you.
Yeah,
that.
I was going to say, and what are some steps that you take in terms of self-care to help alleviate or mitigate your symptoms?
Mm-hmm. I think being very purposeful about mm-hmm. self-care, which we talked a little bit about in the last episode,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of it is just making sure, finding things that can distract my brain when it's on overdrive, having a crisis plan in place mm-hmm. so that I know what steps to take when I do get into a rough situation, and having the support system as well. Because
mm-hmm.
it's not just stuff that I can do. It's how I can lean on others and get support from others when I'm going through a difficult period.
And actually, I was just reading about trauma-informed exercise and fitness instructors, and they utilize specific techniques to help people like relieve the physical side effects of trauma, stress, and anxiety, which is really interesting mm-hmm. to me. I thought that was fascinating as well.
So a minute ago, Christy, you mentioned that you were seeing a counselor. How has therapy helped you with your anxiety and depression?
And I was going to add to that, are your therapists using EMDR techniques?
I am not doing EMDR. A lot of what we're doing, I refer to it as talk therapy. It's not really, mm-hmm. I know CBT is kind of a catchphrase a lot of people throw mm-hmm. around, but it's like introspective, having a sounding board, having somebody who can challenge some of the thoughts I have and who can just kind of help me explore my feelings. And so mm-hmm. I don't think it's one particular type of therapy, I'm sure that we could get lost in a conversation of different therapeutic techniques, but
right.
For me, it's having a sounding board and having somebody who really understands the mind-body connection and how much it can impact daily life.
Okay. And Christy, what advice do you have for someone who is looking to find a mental health care provider or a good therapist?
So my biggest piece of advice is to find somebody who's a good fit with you. Because everybody practices from a different standpoint. Everybody has different life experiences that influence how they practice as a therapist. And so if you start meeting with somebody and you're like, oh, I'm not getting anything out of this, they don't really understand me, keep looking. Because I have sat through many counseling sessions with somebody and I'm just like, I'm wasting my time. And I have thankfully come across a few really good therapists. And once you find that one, you're good. You know, and it's, you just have to find the right fit.
Right.
So that's my biggest advice.
Sure.
That's great advice. I know the Veterans Administration has in the past tested and utilized a computer-based therapeutic approach because the computer, hopefully,
is unbiased.
And people have found that extremely helpful because, if you have someone who has inherent bias, it can be very challenging. We've all been there. We've all been there. Yeah. I had one counselor who was, I was like, wow, this is negatively affecting my mental health. And great advice. Finding somebody that's a good fit.
Not everybody in the field should be in the field.
This is true for so many fields.
Well,
there's a reason that I don't practice. And it's exactly what I had said before, that my mental health is so tied to the input of other people. And so if the input I'm getting is always your anxiety, your depression, your intrusive thinking, it affects me. And so as a counselor, I don't feel safe personally practicing counseling, still struggling with my own issues. And I'm not saying that that's applicable to everybody in the field, because there's a certain aspect of compartmentalizing what you do at work and what you bring home. But it's not always easy. And so for me, I just made that decision that I have a degree, I have the capability to do it, but for my own mental health and the safety of patients, I will not practice.
Okay.
And that's very mature and self-aware
view of things.
Yeah, very responsible. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Christy, what do you feel is the most misunderstood aspect of mental health care?
The lack of resources.
Mm.
I think that unless you're in the mental health field, you talk about mental health and you're like, well, just go see a psychiatrist or just go see a counselor. And with the invention of like this, the internet counseling and stuff, the actual resources in a community for mental health services is severely, severely lacking. And so it's great for you to say, well, go find a therapist or go see a psychiatrist. Well, a psychiatrist has a 6 to 8 month wait. So what do you do in the 6 to 8 months when you can't get the help and then you don't have the resources to get the medication that's prescribed? So there's a huge disparity in the access to mental health care.
That's a darn shame.
Yeah, and I think they talk about mental health care deserts where there's no providers in an area. And I know we've spoken with someone who lives on the West Coast, and they said that although there are providers there, the providers in their area have clientele that pay out of pocket, so they don't accept insurance. And that's, you know, problematic in that area. But yeah, as you said, with like telehealth, it may be more accessible to people. But then again, you know, it can be challenging to get in to see somebody. And then also, we don't have the training. Even, you know, like I know Lita and I went and took a course that's out of Australia for, and it's just a basic mental health overview.
Mental health first aid.
First aid, right. And it's for, you know, in that class where a lot of teachers, human resource personnel, first responders, human resource personnel, because they're not getting that training somewhere else. And this was the only resource available to them for that, and it's from Australia.
Well, another point that I would argue is that people who are on Medicaid and Medicare have a slightly higher incidence of mental health issue. And the providers that take Medicare and Medicaid are sometimes few and far between. So even if there are mental health practitioners in the area, if they don't accept your insurance.
Right.
What do you do?
Yeah.
You are 100% correct with that, Christy. Now that we have a bit of background information, it's time to talk about our initiative.
What's our initiative?
I'm glad you asked, Jean-Marie.
Okay.
To better serve our listening audience, we are now an affiliate of a major medical supplier here in the United States. You will find affiliate links on our website. I can't speak, on our website, Podcast DX.
Okay.
They aim to tailor specific medical supplies and equipment based on your diagnoses to make it less stressful than looking through an entire catalog for what you might need. We are open to your suggestions and will adjust our offerings based on what you, our listeners, find helpful. But now let's return to the show.
And no, all those people who requested psilocybin chocolate, we don't offer that. Christy, what are some less apparent parts of your life that have been affected as you are dealing with mental health challenges? And how have you overcome those challenges?
I would say that isolation is a huge part of having mental illness. That social relationships can become very, very difficult. Especially going through like a depressive phase, you don't want to get out of bed, let alone get out of the house and see people. And so the isolation and feeling like nobody understands, because like we talked about before, mental health is taboo at this point. And so just feeling completely and utterly alone. And then add to that the physical chronic health issues. It just becomes overbearing at times to feel like not a single person on earth understands or could possibly understand what you're going through.
Yeah, that's probably the hardest thing for most of our guests.
But have you found anything to help with that? Like, do you participate in support groups online or any other online, you know, like even online book clubs or crafts or I'm trying to think, like, or blogging or anything like that?
Yeah. So
I know I'm showing my age by saying blogging.
Why, is that an old thing now?
Yes,
too?
It is.
I need to go back to school.
Okay. I don't know if that makes you younger, but okay.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Christy.
I think I find the most support from chronic illness groups. So if I'm dealing with my immunodeficiency, finding a group that specifically supports people with immunodeficiency, or I'm in a severe asthma support group, finding people who understand the severity of severe asthma and having that kind of camaraderie. So I think not just the mental health aspect, but finding healing for the other chronic conditions and finding support for those as well is just as, if not more important, because the isolation isn't just from the depression or the anxiety. Like I said, it's the health issues that come along with it. And so that has been really important. And then to your question about blogging, I don't blog, but I contribute to asthma.net and chronichives.com, and having that outlet to share my experience with these illnesses is also very, very cathartic in being able to support people and educate people on their journey with chronic illness.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, helping people is.
That's a great way.
Yeah. That's that can be really, as you said, cathartic.
Christy, how do you maintain a positive attitude while dealing with so much trauma in your life?
That
she smiles immediately.
Well, I was going to say, you are such a, like, you sound very upbeat and you always have a smile on your face.
Right.
But we know that that can also be, you know, a mask that you put up or a front that you put up. But yeah.
I work very hard to find joy in the things that I do, to find things that bring me happiness. I am a very spiritual person, and I believe that these illnesses and ailments can be used for a purpose that's greater than myself. And so finding those avenues, whether it's writing or speaking to a podcast or, you know, whatever avenue I can use to help others, is one of the ways that I find joy. But I also don't feel like there's profit in moping around. There's a time to commiserate with others and to be understanding of others' positions. But if you continually dwell on the negative, always complaining about everything, well, that's just going to make you feel worse.
Right.
And so focusing on the positives, you know, writing a gratitude list every day. What are you thankful for? And I know that it's difficult for a lot of people who are struggling with lots of things, but I really feel like it's a choice. You can either choose to be down in the dumps in the pit of despair, or you can choose to find happiness and joy in your current struggles.
Excellent. Thank you.
And Christy, what support have you received on your journey? What role have friends and family played?
I think the most important thing is to find friends who are supportive. That you can be open and honest with. And I'm thankful to have a few, just a handful of people who really understand. And part of my crisis plan, I have three very specific people who I have been open and honest with about my journey with mental health that I can call up and say, hey, I'm struggling. And I know that they will be there for me. And same with my family. My mom is very supportive. She goes out of her way to learn about my different conditions and be a compassionate listener. So not just listening, but really trying to understand how it makes me feel mentally and physically. And that's been an incredible blessing that she is so willing to do that.
That's great.
Yeah, props go out to your mom. That's fantastic. Christy, what advice do you have for someone who wonders if they should seek out care from a mental health care professional?
If you're wondering if you should seek something out, seek it out.
Okay. That's great advice.
Yes.
Very swift, succinct.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. You could, yes.
Well, again, Christy, thanks for coming back on our show and talking with us today. As before, how can our listeners learn more about you and what you're doing and follow you and all of that? Please let us know so we can let them know.
Yeah, you can find my articles on asthma.net and chronichives.com and my very tiny YouTube channel of The Chronic Life Guide.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christy. It was an honor to talk with you again.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Yep, you guys too. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Christy. We hope you enjoy the rest of your day, and hopefully it's not too hot.
Thanks. I'm going to stay inside.
Okay.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments about today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com.
And if you have a moment
What happened to...
All the other sources?
Yeah.
They're all there. If you look for podcast,
I've been gone a little while.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Yeah. Okay.
We're working on becoming an official trademark. So.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Right. And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast.
And as always, please remember that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or the qualified healthcare provider or a mental health care provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or a mental health care condition or a treatment and before undertaking a new health care regime, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.